It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In the days following the Boston Marathon, a number of people interviewed spoke about the resiliency of runners. Whether you're a marathoner or a recreational runner, it goes without saying the most essential piece of running equipment is a good pair of running shoes. Joining us to talk about the business of running shoes is our contributor, Rebecca Harris, director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University. Rebecca Harris, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's nice to be here today, Paul, on this beautiful, really spring day. A great running day.
Did you get your training run in today?
I was out there. I'm walking the half marathon, so I will be ready.
You're walking the Pittsburgh half
marathon
on
Sunday. I am. My mother, who's 79, is going to walk it as well, and I have to keep up with her. She used to run marathons, so I'll be right behind her.
Well,
she won first in her class last time, so there you go.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Good for you, and good luck on
Sunday. Thank you.
Well, can you talk to us a little about the actual history of running shoes?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to go all the way back to Pheidippides in ancient Greece, you know, because I'm guessing he wore sandals, but...
Or nothing, right,
yeah,
or nothing. Minimalist, right, very minimalist. Well, people, as you know, have been running for thousands of years, making really the creation of modern-day running shoes relatively new, but here are some really interesting facts, and I had a great time doing the history of this with many of my colleagues from the center, which was great. So... By the 1800s, most shoes had on stitched soles, but the right shoe was the same as the left shoe, which I didn't really know. So at that point...
What do you mean by that?
There was no right and left shoe differentiation. I mean, shoes
really?
Were pretty arcane in the early 1800s. You had stitched soles, but it didn't really have the bent. So
I'm still... Weird.
Yes, and we have all
so
the
So you didn't have to worry about which shoe
no,
you...
No, that's great one, for my know, kids, you know, right.
If you're tired, you know. Okay.
So that was just setting some history. But by the end of the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century, running shoes as we know them today really started to take their first baby steps. So 1898, Saucony is among the oldest footwear manufacturers still around today. And in 1899, four of them from Kutztown, Pennsylvania, there you go, teamed up to manufacture their own line of footwear, producing adult walking shoes and sneakers for children. So they set up the manufacturing facility along the banks of the Saucony Creek. So that is the history of the Saucony Shoe Manufacturing Company. Moving on.
That is great information.
Isn't that great? I mean, did you ever know that? I know.
I did not know that. I know the Saucony running shoes, but I didn't know the story behind it. Now, before you go on, I just want to interrupt you because you said that was 1898.
That was 1898.
Because the first modern Olympics was in 1896, meaning 2 years before the first, recorded.
Sort of official running shoe.
Right. So what were they wearing in 1896?
I went back and tried to really look, and I looked at some of the photos, and they just seemed to be shoes. And I can't really say. They almost look like loafers in some ways, but not heavy loafers the way we know today. So,
well, a lot of the old, you watch the old films of the great, runners of the past, the Glenn Cunninghams, the Jesse Owens, and they were wearing the black leather shoes with spikes. So were they lightweight?
I think that they were, but as we kind of move forward, we'll look at some of that. But maybe some of our listeners know. So if you know, they could tweet us or send us an email. That would be great if you know what they were wearing in the first Olympics. So 1905 is when William Riley, who was a 33-year-old British immigrant, founded the New Balance Arch Support Company. And they were manufacturing arch supports and accessories designed to improve shoe fit in the Boston area. So there you go.
New Balance goes back to 1905.
1905, and it was really
Who knew?
So, I mean, Now, 1910, Saucony was able to produce 800 shoes a day. Pretty cool, huh? 800 a day.
That's not exactly mass production.
Right. Then we're going to jump ahead to 1938, and New Balance creates the first running shoes for competitive runners. So, and they came with a money-back guarantee. So we're now seeing really the evolution of the real running shoes. And moving ahead pretty quickly, just a couple more facts. Reebok, which was named after an African gazelle, was founded in 1958. 1970, we see a guy we'll talk about a little bit more later, Bill Bowerman, began experimenting with pouring liquid rubbers into a waffle iron. I'm sure his wife did not appreciate that to create the waffle soul.
Don't go to their house for right, breakfast.
That's right. and then Blue Ribbon Sports and Bill Bowerman in 1971 made the jump from distributor to manufacturer, releasing the first shoes they called the Nike. So there we see sort of the beginning of
that
Nike.
Was the start of a billion-dollar corporation with a waffle iron pouring rubber into
what are we doing
iron.
Today? Right, Paul. That's right.
So this is how a lot of these things get started.
And you really,
isn't it?
I mean, and these are garage type things. 1987 Asics, which had already been around, they feature their new line of gel custom shoes. 2009 Brooks releases the DNA cushioning system, the first ever smart cushioning midsole. So that just kind of gives people a real history of the evolution of this, and you can see it truly is a real business.
Okay, now there I have a question because the name you mentioned pretty much all of the famous running shoe companies, but I never heard Adidas come up.
I didn't have a fact on Adidas, but we can look that
up. That's a German company, right?
I think that it was, and I don't know any of the history of that, but certainly another one of the big ones. So,
yeah,
yes, definitely.
We had those in high school. I remember the red felt. Adidas, and those were pretty popular, but then Nike seems to have taken the top spot, which leads me to my next question for you, which is the most popular running shoe? This is the thing that you didn't want me to ask you, but
well,
I'm going to put you on the spot anyway.
And here's why. When you look at Runner's World or Running Times, I mean, everybody ranks different running shoes according to different stipulations, different credentials, different ways of measuring it. So as I looked through all the literature, my gut and what I would say to people is there's different types of shoes too. Are you talking about now a cross trainer? Are you talking about a trail running shoe? Are you talking about a minimalist shoe, Paul? Or are you talking about what are the new barefoot shoes? I mean, so I'll go right back at you and say it's really hard to say.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of us have tried them all. However, when you talk about these different classifications, it's on paper, it makes sense.
Right.
It sounds good. Do we really need all these different kinds of shoes?
We definitely do. And we're going to talk about the science of running shoes. And I'm going to tell you a lot about that because
a skeptic would say, might ask, well, are they inventing reasons? And are they saying, oh, well, you need this for cross training. You need this for bowling. You need this for, you know, throwing horseshoes. I mean, is this strictly marketing, or is there really a reason why we need all these different shoes?
Well, there really is a reason, and there's a real science behind this. And so when I did my science work on this, because, you know, we have to look at the science of these things, there's lots of reasons why people choose different types of shoes. So I talked to several experts on this because that's where you go. So first of all, I talked to the amazing local orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Vonda Wright. And she had great information on how to select the right shoes. She said, to run a marathon, you need to have a great foundation in your body and on your feet, and don't underestimate how important that is. The wrong shoes cause injuries, take you off the track, out of running. And when you choose a running shoe, pay attention to your biomechanical efficiency. Be aware of overpronation, and pronation is your body's response to hitting the ground. So what you're doing is if you overpronate, then you need a firmer shoe to keep your foot in a more neutral position. So as you can see from just even the research she's done, the science of the type of shoes that you need really is important.
We're talking with our business contributor, Rebecca Harris, who is the director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University here on Essential Pittsburgh. And she's focusing, with just days left before the Pittsburgh Marathon, focusing on the business of running shoes. I understand, Rebecca, we are currently in the midst of the second running boom. So, of course, I need to find out when the first running boom was and when it was and what it was all about and why are we now in a second running boom.
So if you recall, Paul, I know that both you, the two of us really are old enough to remember this, is when Frank Shorter won the gold medal in Munich in the Munich Olympic Marathon of 1972. And it's been 64 years since an American had won the Olympic gold. And that event is really the catalyst of what was called the first running boom in the 1970s, when millions of Americans watched. They were really inspired by him. And before that, running was really only socially acceptable as sort of a track or cross-country activity. So it was really his victory, and then Bill Bowerman, who really helped with the trend, we talked about him before, that included the expansion of men's and women's running and the advancement of technology. And you see in the 70s that there really was a boom in the activities. And that was really considered the first running boom. Women were getting into the business, Catherine Spitzer, Joan Beloit, Samuelson, if you remember them. Mm-hmm. So, and Rogers, Bill Rogers went on to win both the Boston Marathon and the New York Marathon 4 times. So running became very prevalent. In 1969, the Boston Marathon race participants topped 1,000 for the first time. I mean, before that, it only had been 300 people.
And that's compared to the field for, say, Sunday's,
which is 25,000 to 30,000. I mean, think about that. That's really amazing. My father ran the Boston Marathon in 1980. And at that point, remember, all the running stores were popping up everywhere. So running really became much more mainstream at that point.
And then it declined for a while. And I can remember in the Pittsburgh Marathon, you'd have maybe 7,000 people registering. And that was maybe 10 years or so ago. Now we have a second running boom. When did that start?
They say that the second running boom began around the 1990s, but has really become much more prevalent now in 2005, 6, 7. The number of, in 1990, there was an estimated 200,000 marathon finishers. In 2007, it had doubled to over 400,000 marathoners. And when you look at marathoners, that really reflects upon the people who are doing it just for exercise, who might just be running a couple miles 3 or 4 times a week. So in 1994, I think if you remember, Oprah Winfrey ran a marathon. In 2006, 7-time Tour de France champion Lance Armstrong ran the New York City Marathon. So then the second wave really came along, and we're booming now. We're just booming now.
So let's do the numbers.
Yay.
Thing we like to do.
We love the numbers. We love the numbers.
What about those numbers? What do you have
okay,
for us?
Okay, so this is interesting. According to the Sports Goods Manufacturers of America, year after year growth continues across the spectrum of runners. 50 million people ran at least once in 2011, which was the latest date that they had their data, which was up 7% from 2010. And the population that ran 100 or more days grew by 9%. So you're seeing some real growth in the number of people that are running. And the sales of running footwear in the U.S., which accounts for 40% of the global total. So we are buying a lot of running footwear, grew 8% last year, versus like soccer shoes, which only grew 0.5%. So running is really representing a huge, huge industry. And last year in the United States, $2.46 billion was spent on running shoes.
So somebody listening to this might say, I would like to start a running store. Yeah. What advice would you have for someone who wants to do that?
I'd say you need to look at the market, because there are a number of companies that are out there who are specializing in running stores now. A number of great boutique running stores have cropped up. And so I think there's definitely a market for it. But again, you'd have to see where you could really find a niche. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the stores. But I want you to guess how many units were sold, Paul, last year.
I have no idea.
Oh, come on.
How many units?
Units. How many pairs of shoes?
How many
pairs
of shoes? So
we're looking at $2.46 billion.
In the United States?
Yes.
Wow. A billion.
And it's actually 38 million units.
Oh, okay. That's
because, you know, it's two shoes per pair. I mean, a unit is two.
That's a
lot.
That's
shoes.
Still a lot of shoes.
That's
yes.
A lot of shoes. So we're seeing a huge growth in that.
So let's talk about the science of the shoe
And
foot. While running 26.2 miles, who are some of the local players in the business, in this business of running?
Right. So we talked about Dr. Vonda Wright, who's definitely very attentive to why it's important to move. When I did this research, I talked to a woman named Alina Garbosky, and she has a PhD in research and in research science, and she's based in Colorado, actually. But her expertise is in basic biomechanics and the physiology of human locomotion. So when you ask me, is there a real science and base behind this, there is. And I asked her what types of shoes and technology she thinks runners should consider. And so she said, based on all of her research, a cushioned, lightweight shoe is really the best for performance in a marathon. However, because each runner has a unique anatomical structure and running history, it's important to minimize pain and injury. So in other words, if a runner can't stop because of pain or injury caused by lightweight non-supportive shoes, you need a supportive shoe. Then I said to her, well, what about barefoot minimal footwear? And that's the craze as well. And she said that there have been a number of studies that have been done on the effects of barefoot running on performance. And one study that was done said that barefoot running really doesn't offer any metabolic advantages compared to running with shoes. Mm. And so that was interesting. And she goes into the oxygen consumption. And we've posted a lot of those links on your website. So it seems like the lightweight shoe is the most economical and optimal for performance. And she's done PhD work and thesis work on this, as have a number of her colleagues.
So, and you can go to WESA.FM to get to those links.
Yes.
So we have about a minute left to put a finer point on all of this, making sense of the running boom and what it means to the business of running shoes. What would you say?
Well, I'd say there's some great local players. Mojo Running and Multisport is fabulous. They have some great opportunities to really custom fit you. We have True Runner and Shadyside. Fleet Feet has a fit philosophy. There's a neat new online company that has popped up to help you customize fit your shoes. So I think as you're looking at this business of running, there's many, many opportunities. But the key is it's pretty easy to enter it. You buy a pair of shoes and get out on the road. I understand you've done 20 of these marathons, Paul, so I hope to see you out there next year.
Yeah, the last one was in 2000.
Okay, so you're ready to go.
13 years and a lot of pounds ago. But props to you, Rebecca Harris. You'll be taking part in the half marathon on Sunday. Good luck.
Thank you, and good luck to everybody out there, and it should be a great day.
Rebecca Harris is our business contributor, and she's the director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University. For more on Watergate's legacy and legal ethics, listen to our web exclusive with legal contributor David Harris at WESA.FM. Thanks for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. Tomorrow at noon, we talk with City of Pittsburgh Public Safety Director Mike Huss about efforts to boost security at this weekend's Pittsburgh Marathon. Also, an interview with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me host Peter Sagal. We welcome your comments and story ideas at esspgh@wesa.fm. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and this is 90.5 WESA, Pittsburgh's NPR news station.